Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Anatomy of Courage is a classic work of military psychology by Charles McMorran Wilson, 1st Baron Morran, a British physician who served on the Western Front in the First World War and later became Winston Churchill's personal doctor. First published in 1945, the book examines how soldiers endure fear, strain, fatigue, and repeated exposure to danger. Its subject is not courage as a moral slogan, but courage as a psychological and physiological capacity tested under combat conditions. Drawing on frontline medical experience and lectures delivered to officer students at the Staff College in Camberley, Morran studies why some men remain effective in battle while others collapse under prolonged stress. The book belongs to military medicine, war studies, and early trauma psychology. Its purpose is practical as well as analytical to help officers, doctors, and military institutions understand the mental demands of combat and the conditions that preserve or erode fighting endurance. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, courage as a limited human reserve rather than a fixed virtue. One of the book's central contributions is its treatment of courage as something closer to a limited reserve than a permanent character trait. Morran challenges the simple idea that men are either brave or cowardly by emphasizing the cumulative pressure of battle. A soldier may perform well under fire on one day and fail later after repeated exposure to danger, exhaustion, grief, and uncertainty. This perspective matters because it shifts attention from moral judgment to psychological endurance. Courage becomes a resource that can be consumed by fear and replenished only partly through rest, confidence, discipline, or meaning. Morran's medical background helps him frame breakdown not simply as weakness, but as the result of sustained strain on the whole person. In this sense, the book anticipates later thinking about combat stress and operational fatigue. Its importance lies in recognizing that bravery is not only a matter of will, it depends on duration, context, prior depletion, leadership, and the soldier's perception of whether his suffering has purpose. Secondly, fear in battle as a normal response that must be managed, not denied. Morran treats fear as an unavoidable fact of combat rather than an abnormal defect. The book is valuable because it does not romanticize battlefield behavior. Men under shellfire, facing injury or death, experience bodily and mental reactions that can interfere with judgment, movement, and composure. The practical question is therefore not how to eliminate fear, but how to prevent fear from becoming disabling. Morran's analysis links mental control, physical fatigue, anticipation, and uncertainty. A soldier may endure immediate danger more effectively than prolonged waiting, because imagination can magnify fear before action begins. This insight gives the book a concrete psychological dimension. Fear is shaped by time, expectation, and interpretation as much as by actual danger. By presenting fear as universal, Morran also changes the moral language around combat performance. The brave man is not the man without fear, but the man whose training, duty, habit, and social bonds allow him to continue functioning despite fear. This remains one reason the book is still discussed in military psychology. Thirdly, the officer's role in conserving morale and preventing psychological collapse. The Anatomy of Courage was shaped in part by Morran's lectures to officer students, and its practical concern with leadership is central. Morran's focus is not only the private experience of the individual soldier, but also the conditions created by command. Officers influence courage by shaping confidence, routine, trust, and expectations. Poor leadership can intensify fear by increasing uncertainty, wasting men's strength, or appearing indifferent to their limits. Good leadership, by contrast, can help soldiers interpret danger within a framework of duty and shared purpose. This does not mean that leadership can make men immune to breakdown. Rather, Morran's point is that morale is partly environmental and relational. Soldiers draw steadiness from visible competence, discipline, example, and the belief that their commanders understand the cost of battle. The book, therefore, connects psychology with military organization. It implies that courage cannot be treated as a purely private possession. It is influenced by unit cohesion, credible command, and the careful management of exhaustion and exposure. Fourthly, frontline medical observation as the basis for early combat stress analysis. The book stands out because its arguments grow from a physician's experience close to the fighting of the First World War. Morran was not writing from a detached philosophical position. His interest in courage developed from observing soldiers under extreme conditions and from trying to understand the boundary between endurance and collapse. This gives the work a clinical quality, even though it predates the vocabulary of modern post-traumatic stress disorder. Morran examines the effects of danger, fatigue, repeated strain, and emotional shock in a period when war trauma was often discussed through terms such as shell shock or nervous exhaustion. The significance of his approach is that it places psychological injury within the realities of combat, rather than treating it as a mysterious or purely moral failure. At the same time, the book reflects the medical assumptions of its era. Its categories are not identical to contemporary psychiatry. For modern readers, this historical position is part of its value. It shows an important stage in the development of military trauma thinking. Lastly, the tension between Stoic duty and modern understandings of trauma. A major reason to read The Anatomy of Courage today is the tension between its emphasis on duty and its recognition of psychological limits. Morin wrote in a military culture that valued self-command, endurance, and service under pressure. The book, therefore, often considers courage in relation to discipline, obligation, and the demands of war. Yet it also undermines crude stoicism by showing that men can be worn down by repeated danger regardless of intention. This dual perspective makes the work historically complex. It neither fully belongs to modern therapeutic literature nor to older heroic writing. Its framework can feel dated because later psychology has developed more precise models of trauma, stress injury, and recovery. Still, Morin's insistence that combat performance depends on accumulated strain remains highly relevant. The book helps readers see how military institutions once tried to reconcile the need for continued fighting with the reality that human beings have psychological limits. That unresolved tension is one of the work's most enduring features. In conclusion, The Anatomy of Courage is best suited to readers interested in military history, combat psychology, leadership under pressure, and the history of trauma medicine. It'll be especially useful for military professionals, historians of the First World War, psychologists studying early theories of battle stress, and general readers who want a sober account of courage without romantic simplification. Its practical value lies in showing that courage depends on more than personal will. It is affected by fatigue, fear, leadership, repeated exposure, morale, and the meaning soldiers attach to their suffering. Intellectually, the book helps bridge older ideas of honor and duty with later clinical approaches to psychological injury. Compared with many war memoirs, it is less concerned with narrating campaigns and more concerned with explaining the inner cost of combat. Compared with modern trauma studies, it is less technical but historically foundational. What differentiates it is Morin's combination of frontline medical observation, institutional military concern, and sustained reflection on courage as a human capacity under pressure. Its limitations are real, especially its period language and pre-modern psychiatric framework. But those same qualities make it an important document in the evolution of how war's psychological effects came to be understood. If you would like to support Baron Charles Wilson Morin McMorin, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.